I think this is the new frontier going forward. This is where we're going to see a lot of action, particularly with Neil Gorsuch now on the court.
It will be opening up such a Pandora's box in terms of how people are going to be able to behave in business, because they can say, my religious belief says I don't deal with single women, I don't deal with interracial couples because of my religion.
It does open up all sorts of things if you allow that kind of discrimination in public businesses.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Russia's Chechen purge resumes with no rebuke from Trump. His Pentagon stalls on new U.S. transgender enlistments. And supreme American anxiety clouds the queer crystal ball. Those stories and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Michelle Yater.
And I'm Carol Myers.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending July 8, 2017. The Russian LGBT Network reported this week that the purge of men perceived to be gay or bisexual has resumed in the country's mostly Muslim region of Chechnya. Spokesman Igor Kochetkov told BuzzFeed News that his organization, which has helped dozens of men escape Chechnya during the crackdown, received almost a dozen calls reporting new detentions since Ramadan ended on June 24th. Chechen leader Ramzan Kadyrov previously announced that there would be no more gay or bisexual men in Chechnya by that time, although he and his spokespeople have also denied that there are any gay men in Chechnya. Led by reports in the independent Russian newspaper Novaya Gazeta that broke the story in April and verified by several other reputable outlets since then, hundreds of gay and bisexual men were rounded up, abused, and tortured in secret concentration camps until they gave authorities all the names of their gay friends. At least six deaths were reported, some during torture, and others in honor killings, by their shamed fundamentalist Muslim family members after their release.
The news of further detentions came just as U.S. President Donald Trump was meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin at the G20 summit this week in Hamburg, Germany. Matt Beard of the global rights advocacy group All Out said in a statement later that citizens from across G20 nations have already come together in solidarity, signing petitions in their millions and donating generously to support survivors. It is now time for world leaders to step up to the plate, he said, and send Putin a firm and unequivocal message that human rights violations against the LGBT community in Chechnya must end immediately. Activist groups called on President Trump to raise the Chechnya issue during his first face-to-face talks with Putin, but there were no indications that he did. Both French President Emmanuel Macron and German Chancellor Angela Merkel, however, did urge Putin in earlier separate meetings to investigate the well-documented effort to exterminate gay and bisexual men in his Chechenian region, and he promised each of them he would. However, the Russian LGBT network said in a statement issued in June that Putin's minions were derailing any real effort to do so.
Meanwhile, U.S. Defense Secretary James Mattis has ordered a six-month delay in the implementation of a decision made by his predecessor to open military service to new transgender enlistees on July 1st. Obama Defense Secretary Ash Carter announced a year ago that the ban on trans troops was lifted, allowing those already serving to do so openly without fear of discharge. A study by armed forces leaders had concluded that opening service to new trans enlistees would not undermine military readiness. But, noted the Washington Post, Carter's order also gave the Pentagon a year to determine how to begin processing new transgender recruits who want to serve. Critics of the delay accuse the Trump administration of bowing to a few transphobic military officials and right-wing congressional Republicans. Mara Kiesling of the National Center for Transgender Equality noted that the Department of Defense spent over a year intensively studying the integration of transgender people in the military before allowing them to serve openly in June 2016, and it's had over a year since then to observe the results.
namely that allowing transgender people to serve without fear or lying about who they are is good for military readiness and good for morale. The U.S. Queer Armed Forces advocacy group OutServe, SLDN, issued a statement calling the delay a disservice to the transgender community and to our military as a whole.
7 transgender activists were arrested in downtown Istanbul on July 1st after they led an effort to hold a banned trans pride march. Turkish officials disallowed it in order to preserve public order and keep tourists and participants safe. That was virtually word for word the same reason the Istanbul governor's office gave a week earlier when it banned an annual LGBTQ pride parade for the 3rd consecutive year. It had been the largest peaceful demonstration for LGBTQ rights in the Muslim world, drawing more than 100,000 celebrants in 2014, before far-right strongman Recep Tayyip Erdogan started exerting his increasingly authoritarian power. It's been downhill for human rights advances of any kind in Turkey since then. Police had fired rubber bullets and used tear gas and water cannons to disperse people attending unauthorized rallies that popped up spontaneously to celebrate LGBTQ pride the week before. More than 40 people were arrested.
But more than 1 million people poured into Madrid for more than a week of World Pride festivities that ended with a massive parade on July 1st. The baton was then ceremonially passed during closing ceremonies on July 2nd to New York City, which will host World Pride 2019 in celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Riots. According to a story in the Bay Area Reporter, the World Pride Parade began at 5 p.m. on Saturday, July 1st, and didn't end until after midnight. 2 TV stations broadcast the entire procession live. Local media reported that 1.5 million people turned out to participate in or cheer the parade from the sidelines. Organizers had expected as many as 3 million people would attend at least some part of the World Pride celebration.
Singapore's annual Pink Dot LGBTQ Pride rally drew thousands of people on July 1st, despite new restrictions aimed at keeping foreigners out, and police staff barricades around the rally site demanding identification documents to be sure only Singapore citizens or permanent residents got in. The Pink Dot Equal Love Fest has been held since 2009 under stringent public assembly laws at Hong Lim Park's Speaker's Corner, an area set aside for demonstrations, performances, and exhibitions. This was the first year that non-native corporate support was also banned by the government, in addition to the ban on attendance by foreigners. Pink Dot organizers declined to provide crowd estimates, but according to a Reuters report, participants said the number was below the record 28,000 who took part last year. The level of security also tripled this year, organizers said, with metal detectors at barricades under a law that requires police to monitor events with a crowd of more than 5,000 people. The government claimed that the move was in response to a growing threat of terrorism. Private consensual adult sex between men is punishable in Singapore by up to 2 years in jail. Defenders of the antiquated law say prosecutions are rare, but opponents say the very existence of the law fosters discrimination and abuse towards LGBTQ people.
Several hundred people attended the first ever Pride March in East Timor on June 29th. The tiny island nation separated from Indonesia following a referendum in 1999. But Indonesian militias fought against the move until East Timor independence was officially declared for its 1.2 million residents in 2002. Prime Minister Rui Maria de Araujo posted remarks online ahead of the Pride March expressing strong support for sexual and gender minorities, writing that discrimination, disrespect, and abuse towards people because of their sexual orientation or gender identity does not provide any benefit to our nation. All children need to live in an environment which provides protection, love, and the opportunity to develop themselves, he added, regardless of their differences.
Thousands of people marched in Belfast on July 1st to demand that Northern Ireland join the rest of the United Kingdom and enact marriage equality. The ruling socially conservative Democratic Unionist Party has steadfastly opposed even the introduction of a marriage equality bill in the Assembly, even though opinion polls show a strong majority in Northern Ireland now support opening civil marriage to same-gender couples. Thousands of demonstrators marched through central Belfast waving rainbow flags and banners reading, "Love is a human right."
Homegrown celebrities, including actor Liam Neeson and Snow Patrol singer Gary Lightbody, along with OUT TV host Graham Norton, voiced their support for the march in YouTube-posted videos. Marriage equality came to the primarily Roman Catholic Republic of Ireland through a first-of-its-kind referendum in 2015.
And finally, New Zealand lawmakers unanimously approved a measure on July 6th to apologize for the tremendous hurt and suffering of hundreds of men who were convicted of engaging in private, consensual adult gay sex during the years it was a crime. Justice Minister Amy Adams spearheaded the move in Parliament.
Mr. Speaker, it is never too late to apologize. While we cannot ever erase the injustice, this apology is a symbolic but an important act that we hope will help address the harm and right this historic wrong. It is clear that the laws under which the men affected were convicted have not represented the views of most New Zealanders for many years, and it's right that we now formally recognise that.
The government estimates about 1,000 men will be eligible to have their convictions expunged. Most were prosecuted before 1986, when New Zealand decriminalized homosexuality. They were convicted of crimes such as indecency, sodomy, or providing a place for homosexual acts. The apology, however, doesn't extend to convictions for such things as underage or non-consensual sex. Sex between women in New Zealand was never explicitly illegal.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 8th, 2017, produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Michelle Yater.
And I'm Carol Myers.
It's commonly said that conservative U.S. voters keep a laser focus on the future of the Supreme Court when they elect a president, while progressive voters do not. Let's go against the stereotype this week and look at the impact of President Trump's new Justice Neil Gorsuch on the court thus far and what pending cases will mean for LGBTQ civil rights. Two recent court decisions demonstrate what the legal environment is like.
The U.S. Supreme Court has decided that the state of Arkansas can't stop same-gender couples from being listed on birth certificates. The ruling, overturning a state high court decision, was announced on the second anniversary of the Supreme Court's June 26th marriage equality ruling. Arkansas officials had insisted that only biological parents could be listed on birth certificates. The Supreme Court issued what's called a summary judgment against that policy without having even heard oral arguments. The written decision repeatedly cites the justice's 2015 marriage equality ruling and seems to impatiently point out that among the specified rights, benefits, and responsibilities of marriage in the ruling, we expressly identified birth and death certificates. Three justices opposed the decision, however. Newly installed Trump Justice Neil Gorsuch wrote that opinion, joined by fellow dissenter Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas. A child's birth certificate is frequently used to establish a familial connection that, for example, can allow the named parent to make medical decisions for a child or to enroll a child in school.
The Supreme Court also announced that it will hear a case involving a Lakewood, Colorado baker's refusal to make a cake for a gay couple's wedding because of his religious beliefs. Masterpiece Cake Shop owner Jack Phillips says that marriage is only between one man and one woman, and claims that forcing him to bake the cake for the gay couple would make him complicit in their wedding and thereby violate his freedom of religion. After failing in Colorado's courts, attorneys for Phillips from the far-right Alliance Defending Freedom convinced the Supreme Court to take the case. It will be their first to weigh the ability to discriminate based on religious belief against the civil right to be protected from discrimination in the public sphere. The High Court's next term begins in October.
For This Way Out, I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Monique Lukens.
It's taken a number of tries for the Supreme Court to agree to take a slice of wedding case law And Gay USA's Ann Northrup and Andy Hum think there's a reason for the decision, one that goes with a strategy for LGBTQ opponents going forward.
I would suspect that the reason they have now agreed to take this case is because Neil Gorsuch showed up to vote to take the case.
You need four people to take a case, so we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but it's nerve-wracking.
Yes.
All right, so this is Masterpiece...
Cake Shop.
Cake Shop. A guy does not want to make cakes for same-sex weddings.
Colorado, and this is a key point, has a state law that forbids discrimination by public accommodations, meaning businesses, on the basis of sexual orientation, and I think gender identity, but at least sexual orientation.
Yes.
So every time this came up to the Human Rights Commission, to the courts in Colorado, they ruled you are violating the non-discrimination provision of the law, and therefore you cannot get out of making this wedding cake.
You've got a cake, you sell it to whoever comes into the shop. And as has been proven with some of these other bakers, because the local press has done investigations, they call up and they say, look, we're divorced, but we're getting remarried. We'd like a cake. And you might have religious objections against that. Or I'm from an atheist group or all these other things, or a Satanist group or whatever.
They can have a religious belief that only discriminates against gay people. But they still are not allowed to bring that into the business atmosphere. Now, what the Alliance Defending Freedom is arguing is that the federal religious freedom protections, which have been expanded by the Supreme Court in recent years, the Hobby Lobby case being one of them about contraception and businesses not having to pay for it, is that that religious freedom law trumps the state non-discrimination law, and that's what the court is going to have to sort out.
But you would be opening up such a Pandora's box in terms of how people are going to be able to behave in business, because they can say, my religious belief says, you know, I don't deal with single women, I don't deal with black people because of my religion, I don't deal with interracial couples.
It does open up all sorts of things if you allow that kind of discrimination in public businesses.
I'm Kate Clinton.
I'm Cleve Jones, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine.
An informed community is a strong community.
The Supreme Court handed down another end-of-term ruling that has implications for LGBTQ rights, even though its subject was government funding for a church school playground. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer hailed the decision.
The Supreme Court also today handed down its own decision in the Trinity Lutheran case. That was a 7-2 decision, which is a significant victory for religious liberty and an affirmation of the First Amendment right of all Americans. The court recognized there's a clear difference between the government supporting a particular religion and the government simply treating all people the same, fairly, regardless of their religion. This ruling reaffirms that the government cannot discriminate against individuals or organizations simply because they or their members hold religious beliefs. The president believes that America is stronger when people of faith and their organizations can exercise their religion freely, and he's pleased with today's ruling.
On Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, Slate.com's Dahlia Lithwick explained how the decision to allow Missouri's Trinity Lutheran Church to compete for a state-sponsored grant is another slip down the slippery slope of so-called religious freedom rulings.
It is clear to me, at least, that the next front in civil rights litigation in America is going to be this collision between religious dissenters, we'll remember from Hobby Lobby and the Little Sisters cases, people who want to sort of end run basic civil rights statutes based on their predicate belief that my religion prohibits me from being involved. And so we've seen a whole raft of cases, florists who don't want to afford flowers to same-sex marriages, pharmacists who don't want to deliver birth control. And these, all of these dissenters come into kind of a real profound clash with just basic civil rights statutes. And I think this is Sam Alito and Neil Gorsuch and Clarence Thomas. This is really where their heart is right now. So the Trinity Lutheran decision is such an important, I think, marker for where we are in terms of this so-called wall between church and state. Missouri has a state constitution that provides that we don't take taxpayer money and give it to churches. We don't give it to any churches. This goes beyond the federal constitutional law. And it basically says that the state should not be in the business of picking and choosing which churches it wants to subsidize, so no tax dollars at all go to any church. Trinity Lutheran operates a preschool and a school. It is an explicitly religious institution, and it wanted to be considered for a Missouri program that uses recycled tires to create playground materials so that kids don't bump their heads when they fall off the swings. They were very, very high in standing in terms of their eligibility for this state program, and the state said, we can't give this to you. We cannot give you access to a program that uses taxpayer funds to fund a church. And in a 7-2 decision, the Supreme Court said it's okay, they're eligible, and to discriminate against churches for this sort of program is in violation of their rights. So this really changes, I think, the baseline for what churches will be able to ask us to use with our taxpayer money. And the reason it's important, I think, is because only two justices dissented. Sonia Sotomayor wrote a blistering dissent saying this is a sea change from what we have provided before, and only Justice Ginsburg agreed with her. So by a 7-2 margin now, I think we're looking at a whole new ballgame in terms of churches being able to say, we want what everyone else is getting, and to fail to give that to us is a form of discrimination, religious discrimination in and of itself. They drop a footnote and say this only applies to rubber resurfacing in church playgrounds. This is not about, you know, whole hog endorsing, giving churches anything that they want for any purpose. And so it may be of some limited precedential value going forward. And Justice Breyer joined separately to say, I want to be real clear, this is just about rubber stuff in playgrounds. So there is some argument to be made that the court tried to cabin how far this will spread. But I think, as again, as a marker of the openness of this court to really allowing for funding of, as Sotomayor says, if you can fund the rubber stuff in playgrounds, why not the pews? Why not the stained glass windows? And I think she's pointing to a real trend. And I really do think when the court decided the Hobby Lobby case, when they kind of cracked open the door for religious dissenters to be able to do an end run around basic civil rights laws, they really opened a Pandora's box that is going to end up saying, we will have such solicitude in this country for religious dissenters that nobody is going to have to serve anyone if they feel that their religious values are being undermined. And as I said, I think this is the new frontier going forward. This is where we're going to see a lot of action, particularly with Neil Gorsuch now on the court.
Dahlia Lithwick's analysis leads us to Mississippi and a sweeping pro-discrimination ruling that has Ann Northrup's and Andy Humm's Gay USA hair on fire.
Mississippi, at least a year ago, maybe longer, passed a religious freedom law that was incredibly broad and specific. It said, you may discriminate against LGBT people if your religion tells you, or unmarried women who have children, and they enumerated these things. Here are the ways you can discriminate. And the courts took a look at this and said, whoa.
Well, it was U.S. District Judge Carlton Reeves wrote a terrific opinion.
And said, this is ridiculous, this is absolutely unconstitutional, and issued an injunction against enforcement of this law. Meanwhile, the right wing goes to the Court of Appeals, the Fifth District, and the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals says, well, the people who are complaining about this law haven't actually been harmed by it yet, since it hasn't gone into effect.
That's not true. One of the groups said, the LGBT groups, we had to put guards in front of our church after the bill passed because there was a truck with a swastika parked across the street. And just this week, the Christian Knights of the KKK distributed flyers.
I think it's ridiculous.
They are under assault.
They lifted the court lifted the injunction on the grounds that the plaintiffs had no standing to challenge the law because they had not been directly harmed yet. So, you know, we wait till someone's dead and then we decide whether the law is constitutional. And we're back in court appealing the lifting of the injunction because this is insane.
We're asking for a hearing en banc before all of the, well, an 11-member panel or something like that.
Because we're scared to go directly to the Supreme Court right now. We don't know what the religious freedom stuff is going to be. They just took the Colorado bakery case.
Yes.
This is the whole thing that is happening across the country. We've seen it in Texas. We've seen it throughout the South. We've seen it in various places where states are trying to hold the line, rebel against the Obergefell Supreme Court decision 2 years ago legalizing same-sex marriage.
Now, this really all comes down to the states where discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation is allowed are trying to keep doing that to same-sex married couples. So if we get one more judge appointed by replacing a liberal by Donald Trump, we're screwed.
If Kennedy resigns, and he's hanging in at the moment on the Supreme Court, Anthony Kennedy, but he is 80 years old, and, you know, I'd want to resign if I were him. But he may just be horrified enough by his acolyte, Mr. Gorsuch. But Ginsburg, you know, can they really stick it out for 4 years, and can we change the Senate or the presidency in that time?
Plus the fact that Clarence Thomas has been wanting to retire. He's 69 years old. He wants a life, I understand.
Well, whoever retires.
And he could be replaced by a much younger person who could hang in there. The judges that Trump is looking to appoint are in favor of reinstating sodomy laws if the states want to, reinstating bans on same-sex marriage if the states want to. And even if we got a Democratic president and we got a Democratic Congress and all the state legislatures, if we have a court that is hostile to us, they'll overturn these laws.
This president and this Senate are going to confirm more Neil Gorsuches. Right. And
we're screwed.
You heard Andy Hum and Ann Northrup on Gay USA. If that's not enough courtroom drama for you, the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals has now joined the Second Circuit in refusing to reconsider their respective three-judge panel decisions against queer plaintiffs in employment discrimination cases. Since the Seventh Circuit has disagreed, the question of protections for LGBTQ workers will likely go to the Supreme Court in the near future. So, as we always say around here, stay tuned. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. This week, Michelle Yater, Carol Myers, Wenzel Jones, and Monique Lukens contributed program material, with thanks to Ross Stevenson in Auckland and Steve Pride in Los Angeles. Tupac Shakur and AC/DC performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and our listener donors for making this program possible. Look for This Way Out on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For associate producer Richard Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KDNK Carbondale, Colorado, 4BI Fortitude Valley, Queensland, WOOL Bellows Falls, Vermont, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please do stay tuned.